does. Before I start, I should say you may not all be aware that I have been given this juicy bag of books. Not all bought from the local charity shop, but actually really good books currently. Which I am going to give away to the person who gives me £5 at the... Sorry, the person...
Oh, come on.
Head thought, outside thought. The person who asked the best question. And this is going to apply to every single panel, not the individual interviews, but every single panel. The person who asked the best question gets a bag of books. So it's quite a good way of getting everyone to speak up. And we are going to chat away, but and I'm going to take questions at the end. But if somebody has a question that, as we're going along, it raises something that you would like to know more about, you have something at the time, please put up your hand and I will incorporate you into the conversation. So you don't have to wait for the end. Put up your hand at a suitable moment. I'll call on you and we'll take the question as we go along. So I will introduce the lovely ladies on the panel, starting with Frances on the left. Hello. under her real name, Frances McNeil, Frances Brodie has written 4 novels, many short stories, plays for BBC Radio and scripts for television. She has taught English and history at Bradford College and tutored writing courses for the Avon Foundation. She has said about the heroine of her crime series, Kate Shackleton, "Kate sprang to life from our family album, circa 1920. She came carrying her camera, looking at me." There are two. I know, it's really good. Give me shivers. That's why I cut that bit out. Yeah. There are 2 novels in the series so far, Dying in the Wool and A Medal for Murder, with the 3rd out in October.
Carol, it's actually September now.
Oh, no. September. less time to wait. Pre-order now. Carola Dunn.
Sorry, I have to do my little wave again.
Is it Carola?
Yes, it is.
Carola Dunn is the author of over 50 books. That's 50. 19 mysteries in the Daisy Dalrymple series, which is set in England in the 1920s. A new series set in Cornwall in the sort of 1960s, 1970s, which starts with her current novel, Manna from Hades. And 32 Regency novels and numerous novellas. Blimey. Originally from England, she lived in Southern California for 20 years and then moved to Eugene, Oregon, where she gets the crystal meth that enables her to write so fast. No, I'm just kidding. Where she is currently based. Dolores Gordon Smith has worked as a teacher, civil servant, library assistant, factory worker, and Christmas pudding maker. Excellent.
I also stuck the brushes in Tipex bottles as well.
Oh, God, you should totally. Okay, you should really put that on your website, because it's just that kind of thing that everyone goes, ooh. That's gone now, really, hasn't it, Tipex? It's very sad. It's very sad. And carbon paper as well. Yeah. Oh, well. Having said that, it's nice not to write books on the electric typewriter, so, you know, do that whole line, you get it right. She lives in Greater Manchester and writes the Jack Haldane series, of which there are 5 books to date, set after the First World War. On her website, she writes about her choice of historical time period. "I have always been fascinated by the 20s. The 4 years of the First World War had ripped away the old securities and expectations, and when it was over, things were never the same again." And Darren Lake is the pseudonym of Dinah Lampitt, who's written 8 historical novels under Dinah Lampitt, but they're now being re-released under the name Darren Lake. That's right, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah.
They mingle fact, fiction, reincarnation, and even some time travel, and are very tightly plotted, as is her John Rawlings' Georgian historical mystery series. She has most recently written The Mills of God, which I believe is the start of the planned start of a series?
Yes, it is.
About which she says, "It is labelled..." This is kind of why I wanted to finish with Darren as well, because it'll take us right into it. "It is labelled by the publishers as a cozy, though with a serial killer on the loose and several gruesome murders, I would hardly describe it as that. However, it is set in a sleepy Sussex village, which is woken up with a start by a double knifing." So, what are cozies? I, you know, was given this panel, and I'd read Darren's Dinah Lampitt's before, but not the Jack Rawlins ones, that I knew what you were... an evil poisoner. I always remember kind of one time in London at a CWA meeting where we were all going out afterwards and she got on a tube train going, "And then I put the poison in his hemorrhoid cream." And we never got you never get seats in the tube train so fast. I recommend it to everyone.
What's a good way?
That was in the early stages of the evening. You can imagine the later ones. So I started reading these books, and to be honest, there's really only one book out of everyone's books that I thought this is probably fitting into my idea of a cozy, which is Your Manna from Hades. Because there aren't any gruesome murders, and you know, it's more light-hearted. You know, Frances, your books are really poignant. You know, Dolores in the Jack Haldanes. You know, we have the Jack backstory, which you get to in our, you know, 100,000 Dragons, which is pretty. You know, there's torture, and you know, I don't want to give away too much, but you know, it's his backstory, and you realise why the poor chap's been a bit quiet. You know, it's bad things have happened to him in First World War, and you know, Darren, of course, the hemorrhoid cream. let's start by asking: Do you all actually think you're writing cosies, Frances? Why don't you start? And it can be a no. It can absolutely
well,
be a no.
Well, it never occurred to me because we're not the ones that come up with these labels. And I think all writers, we probably all start in the same way. We mooch about a bit, then we pick up a pen or start to type and just try to write a damn good novel. And it has been described as looking at a blank page till your forehead bleeds. And you know, maybe in a cozy, we just don't produce the industrial quantities of blood that spill onto the characters and onto the readers. But it is a kind of a subgenre of a genre. And
well,
I think most of us
don't. Sorry, we're not allowed to say that again.
but most of us don't take any notice of that and don't even think about it.
Are you aware? I mean, also the Daisy Dalrymple, you know, the one I read, First World War, Second World War.
Daisy would be the First World War.
First World War, and of course, a conscientious objector, you know, and it's that also, and, you know, again, without wanting to give too much stuff away, there's a great deal of backstory that goes back to very, you know, harrowing events that happened in the war, and there's a real, you know, dark, poignant core to the book.
Yeah, I'd say this is my latest Daisy book, this Anthem for Doomed Youth, which you probably all recognise as the title of a Wilfred Owen poem. And it's probably the darkest of my books, in fact. It does go into some horrible things that happened in the war, though I try not to dwell on the, I don't do a lot of blood and gore. You can harrow without explicit descriptions of unpleasant injuries and so on. On the whole, I'd say most of my books are sort of light-hearted little murders, which
that's very good. Really cozy description.
I like to think of as more traditional than cozy, but the Cornish ones, there's only two of them so far, so who knows where they're going. In fact, the one I'm in the middle of, in fact, I've only written one chapter. My deadline is approaching, but the two I've written are cozier than, certainly than some of the Daisy books. So the chief reason I'd say that I'm not happy with the cozy label is that an awful lot of people just will not pick up a book if it's labelled that way, and that's more a matter of reader prejudice than of what I write.
Aren't there a lot of people who want that, though? I mean, I certainly am really quite over-tortured dead prostitutes. Call me old-fashioned, if you will.
No, my favourite letters from readers are the ones that say, I've just had a horrible illness and I've been really sick all summer and I've been feeling terrible and the only thing that's pulled me through is reading your books. And, you know, I feel that if they were full of torture, they probably wouldn't have wanted to read them when they were feeling pretty ghastly anyway. So, you know, yeah, it does cut both ways. And there are a lot of people who want something that's more comforting, but something that has the structure, the puzzle structure of a mystery. So
I don't like the label cozy, principally because I've never heard it used. Maybe it's different in America, but I've never heard it used in Britain as anything else but an insult. It's always pejorative, and I've been told by editors, oh, this is just a cozy, when you think, oh my God, no, it's not, it's a detective story.
And, so,
we should stop, you know, putting pejorative labels on books. I mean, when I first started writing, I think I had two books out before I'd even heard the term cosy, because it is an American term, and I don't think it's in use amongst ordinary people in Britain.
It is.
Is it? I have heard it.
The big difference is that American cosies are COZY and English cosies are COSY.
I was actually, Darren, will you answer, will you speak to the cosy as applied to your work in general?
Well, I always thought that a cosy novel was set in a small village somewhere. Within this small village, death, mayhem, murders, slit throats, things in hemorrhoid cream, and I will tell you how to do it later, will all take place, but it has to be in the confines of a small village. And that, to me, is the derivation or the meaning. Is that the right word?
Amateur detective? Does a cosy, do we think a cosy has an amateur detective in it?
No.
No.
No, not necessarily.
Mine both have an amateur detective and a cop.
I have quite a lot of police procedural stuff. It's always useful if you're having an amateur detective, of course, as Jack's an amateur, but he does have some very convenient friends in the police force, because you simply have to have them given access to information.
And all of your books are, none of your books are written in the present day. Does a cosy need to be set in the past?
One of my books is the cosy.
Oh, of course, the up and coming one.
No, okay. I'd say the quintessential cosy, as understood in America, tends to be set in a small town. And to have an amateur detective, usually with a police sidekick or a PI sidekick, and very often concerned as much with recipes or crafts as with murder.
Right, lots so of that.
Go ahead.
And perhaps we stumble on these things just accidentally, because my sleuth is a First World War widow's drawn into sleuthing because she wanted to know what happened to her husband.
I thought that was terribly clever of you.
She has a policeman sidekick. Partly because there were places in the 20s she simply wouldn't have been allowed to go. The first book, Dying in the Wool, which some people bought because they said they like knitting.
I was
really pleased about that. But she would have had to go into the wool exchange in Bradford, and women simply weren't allowed in, unless perhaps early morning cleaners. So, and also pubs and tap rooms and so on. So it just happens organically, really.
Are there also somewhere that women, because, you know, women read the majority of crime books, are there somewhere where women can actually, you know, read books set in the past and see historical women actually taking an active role, being investigative? I mean, Miss Marple is such a feminist heroine in so many ways, and, you know, one of the reasons is because, you know, she's the brightest one there, but she uses the prejudice against her and turns it into her greatest weapon, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, was that, I know you have male detectives, did you have a mental discussion with yourself about whether it's a man or a woman?
Well,
very action-y.
You see, my John Rawlings has lots of love affairs. Mm. He's very into it. and all the women that he has affairs with are big women, strong women. Except for his wife, who's a little bit weak. But she dies, so
that's all right.
But the rest of the women are pretty tough, you know.
Oh, I love Elizabeth.
Yeah, they certainly are. Yeah. And 18th century women were, in many cases. But can I just briefly read you a list? It's not going to be long, I assure you. But this is a list of my books that I've written. And is there a case here for any of them being a cosy? And the answer is no, before you have to work it out. In The Dark Walk, there was strangulation by a black stocking which was worn by the victim. She had to get it off before he strangled her, but don't ask how. It was my first book. Beggar's Opera, hanging twice, and the second one was a child. Devil's Tavern, knocking on the head with a thing and throwing into the River Thames. Peerless Pool, drowning and beating up. Romney Marsh skeleton made up, a body made up to look like a scarecrow. Apothecary's Hall, poison, west wind, impaled on a ship's figurehead. I thought that was a rather lovely touch.
But you know what, you can get that in Niamh. A lot of these you would get in Niamh Marsh as well, or Dorothy Arsay.
It's a matter of how graphically you describe it, not of what happened.
I do think that. I mean, you've got to kill somebody somehow. I mean, you can't just torture them to death, and my husband always say that you're fun, really. But or like Guantanamo Bay, just pay them American rock music till they start crying and tell you everything.
Yeah.
But I think it's a lot that Cozy also doesn't have is the forensic side of things. Now you
can I just finish
this?
That's
all right, come on.
I'll start on my 50 after this.
Quiet. St James's Palace, anorexia. Oh, and I forgot to tell you there was a paedophile ring working in another one. Shadows, two murderers at work in one book, both committing horrible crimes and wondering who each other was. Setting Sun, stabbing, a death in hellfire, curare, that's rather a good one. And how did he get hold of it? And I found out exactly how he would have got a hold of it in the 18th century. Cornish fiddler, suffocation, black pyramid, bludgeoning, and Wedding Feast, which is the next book to come out both here and in the United States. And that was a stabbing and also a poisoning. So I wouldn't call any of those cozy at all.
Well, that's really another discussion, because as I say, we can look at Agatha Christie and we can look at Niamh Marsh, and there's lots of very gruesome ways to kill people in those. I think that it's not perhaps the deep forensic investigation, and I was going to ask if this is why a lot of your books are set in the past, because you don't have the forensic details that you would go into
there
in the present. Was that a consideration?
Can I just pick that one up?
Oh, yeah.
Because I really did think about when to set it. I mean, I'd always been very, very interested in the First World War, but that was sort of in, you know, one compartment. When I came to think, you know, I'd like to write a book that can sell, I thought about this whole forensic thing, and I came to the conclusion, and I wish someone like Leslie Horton was here, who does really good police procedurals, because the problem I had was that it's so easy to, if you've got all the resources with DNA and fingerprint testing, what have you, you know, all the resources of science, that you really have to have someone being incompetent if they're not going to get it. And I thought, I don't want people to be incompetent. I certainly didn't want that. It's not so much an Agatha Christie thing, but that cliche of the dopey policeman, you know, the Lestrade character. I wanted my policeman, who's a pal of Jack's, my hero, to be, you know, perfectly bright, perfectly competent. And yet, I couldn't figure out how to do it. You
set
know,
it in Italy hard.
To set it in Italy, you know, but you're back to incompetence.
Yes.
Again.
Yes.
You know. Now, I've heard Leslie, I'm not her agent or anything, but the thing is, DNA testing and everything is very expensive, and a lot of times it's not called in. But you think, you know, my God, I'm writing a novel, you know. Is my crime so unimportant that no one's actually going to spend a couple of quid on the DNA testing? No, they're not. So that really is when I thought, yeah, I want to go back before we have these scientific advances.
There's another factor in here, which is that I think cozies tend to deal with crimes of people who know each other well. Crimes between people who know each other well. Whereas a lot of the darker stuff deals with sort of random crime and the kind of killer who picks victims perhaps by certain characteristics, but they're not emotional crimes in the same way. So we're writing, or I at least am writing, more about why people who know each other, who are close, can be driven to the point where they will kill each other, which to me is more interesting than why someone goes down the street bopping people on the head.
Yes, I agree with that. But coming back to the point about why that period, I started writing about that period because my first novel was based on stories from my family in the first part of the 20th century. And so it was a period that I got to know quite a lot about. And the very first one I showed to the agent, and she said to me, how do you see this? And I said, as a literary novel. And she said, well, because it's northern and because it's working class, publishers won't see it that way.
Why not?
She said, they'll see it as a saga, she said. So I wrote four sagas. And
it's quite a lot of money in sagas, isn't there? We're trying to be positive.
But for the characters, if you're writing about people from a poor background, the trouble is they never have any money and they can't do anything exciting or go anywhere. You know, they've never got two halfpennies to rub together. And if someone, say, wants a trip to London, they can only go if someone else pays the train fare. And so when I thought about writing a detective story, I thought, oh, this would be great because no one could be an amateur sleuth in the 1920s unless she had money.
Right.
So then I was able to have a character that has her own very nice house that I found for her that has a wood at the back. And she has a 1910 Jowett convertible. And she doesn't worry about money.
Yeah.
So
I thoroughly recommend, actually, House Hunting for your hero. I spent a lovely afternoon in the area of Strand. I even went in the Savoy for afternoon coffee at one point. But house hunting for Jack. And so he's got a lovely flat on Shandos Row with a fabulous pub. It's actually called the Man and Flag. Now, in the book, I actually call it the Heroes of Waterloo because that's the name of a local pub where I live, which I think is a wonderful name. But the Man and Flag has seen many a good discussion. And it's super to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Daisy and Alec have moved to Hampstead because their house in
it's a lovely house. Constable Close.
It's actually Gainsborough Gardens.
It's based on
Gainsborough Gardens, where I gather Boy George lives.
Yes, priced out by the bankers of Gwyneth Paltrow. I went
to Hampstead. I came out of the tube station, and there was an estate agent right opposite. So I went in there, and I described the kind of place I was looking for, explaining that I wasn't planning on buying it. And they sent me over there, and it was just perfect. It would have been a fairly new house, and Alex inherited it, so he didn't have to be really rich. And yeah, they gave me a map and everything.
Oh,
and
that's
incredibly.
I think a really essential book for someone who's writing about the 18th century, which I am, is a book of poisons. And poisons that can do all sorts of things, including henbane, which is like LSD, apparently. The witches used to use it and thought they could fly. But anyway, there is this common poison called, I've forgotten the name of it now, water hemlock.
Yeah.
And it's found growing in all our streams, so if any of you have got anybody at home you don't like, you'd better take a note of this now. Water hemlock is found growing in streams and rivers in England, and it looks like cow parsley. Pull it up, and if the root looks like a parsnip, you're in. Because this is...
Oh, isn't it Elizabeth George? She does that in one of the Elizabeth Georges.
Does she?
Yes.
Damn Elizabeth George.
Everyone's everything by now. Is Elizabeth George a cosies? I expect they are, really. I mean... Is it the level of violence? I mean, do people have a sort of sense that is there a level of violence that one doesn't want to go to? Are you consciously aware of that?
I know when I'm actually reading, I'm not very happy if it's too horrible.
I don't read all these horrible postmortems and things.
Mm.
And then he removed her left eye and put it in a bowl,
and
then their kidney came out and was half green. I mean, I don't want to know.
I don't think that kind of trophies, do they? That's probably another good definition.
It's atmosphere, though, as well. Does anybody watch Bones? You know that series?
I've seen it.
Well, at the beginning, there's usually a very gruesome corpse discovered, but it's actually hilariously jolly.
Why don't they just banter? they banter and there's unrelieved sexual tension.
Touch the skull and the eye comes out and he goes, you know, and everybody's going,
any of you like this eye popping skulls with things falling out? And
my brother,
they
are
at the
cozy.
I'm actually now doing young adult novels for America, which are super clean, and they like them a lot. And I'm doing Bonkbusters for England, which are really rude. Under, thank God, a different name, so I can't get Googled by American librarians. I actually think I need to do a pseudonym, but that's worked out very well. But the Bonkbusters people are very nervous about in America because, you know, that's like Jackie Collins and Judith Krantz. A lot of people express their affection for each other quite a lot in different ways. And the young adult books aren't selling over here because publishers over here for the young adult books want really gloomy books for teenagers about their friends who do heroin and want to get them to try it too over Saturday night. So I would have thought Cozies would do. Are you guys all published in America?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, my basic publisher, my original publisher is St. Martin's in New York, but Daisy finally got home to England a couple of years ago, and they're all coming out in England now.
Mine are coming out in New York next year.
Fantastic. Yeah. And do you think that America is more, have you been over to America and done readings? Do you think it's more kind of cozy friendly?
No.
Eight points question, move on.
That's a dead end.
Friends stream it for me.
Watched it, and I thought in a way that was a perfect cozy because the mad old aunts are bumping off men.
Bumping one another?
No, bumping them off.
Different
genre. Bumping off
hearing.
Out of sheer kindness because they think they're sad and lonely.
Yes, but the brother is pretty sinister.
But the brother, when the brother comes in,
This case of knives and starts taking out.
And Peter Lorre's in it, who can always do creep really well.
And you know, in Agatha Christie, there is a ton of drug use. There are some incredibly poignant books. You know, it's a real kind of like misnomer to think that cozies can't touch on the things that people care about in the important
ways.
Well,
they've got to care enough to kill someone, after all.
Exactly. Yeah. So do we think that the pendulum's going to swing back?
From where to where?
From the gruesomeness that's much more popular
nowadays. I think there's
room
for both. But I think there's probably more room in America for the cozies.
And there are festivals. I mean, there's, you know, isn't Malice Domestic
basically
cozy, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. I think, did you have a question?
Well, I just wondered if there was we talked about the issue of Midsummer Murders. Is there an ethnic component that's missing from cozies? Do we have coloured people in cozies?
Well, I do, but it's not that easy to fit coloured people into the 20s because there weren't that many around, but I do. I have.
You have an Indian.
I have Indians, and I think the only African is a black butler who came home with a colonial family, but he plays a part in it. And then in America, in the American bit, I have one book set in America, A Case of the Murdered Muckraker, which just came out here, and that has a black doorman, but you know, their roles were limited in the 20s.
It would be a great idea.
I have a Jewish violinist, for instance, but they stood out much more. And if you go back and read the Golden Age stuff, there was a huge amount of prejudice expressed in those books. And you can't just dismiss that and say, you know, we've got to have a black heroine because today we ought to have a black heroine.
But there were a lot of black people in England in the 18th century. There's books devoted to it. There's a book called Black England by Glossina Govinchko or some peculiar name, and it really describes the way that the slaves were brought into Bristol and taken into the households and what happened to them. They had their own pubs, believe it or not. They had their own facilities. They were quite an accepted part of our society.
Traditionally quite middle class as well, isn't it?
And your point about the income, I thought, was very well made there, because you were actually talking about physical mobility. You cannot move around and investigate things if you don't have the money to take you there.
And I have tried in mind to kind of broaden it out a little bit, certainly in terms of class, and also to look at the sorts of things people got drafted into doing.
Mm.
Like in the Medal for Murder, I have two people who fought in the Boer War. And I went to the armories in Leeds, where I read a diary of a Leeds man called Fred Whaley, who was 19 when he fought in the Transvaal. And it was great to read that diary, because it was one of those untold stories. And he said it was so cold at night that the water taps froze on the carts and the blankets turned into sheets of ice. And they knew that Lord Roberts had a whole case full of whiskey on his cart. So late at night, he and another man, his comrade, went and got this crate of whiskey. And he said, oh, we respected Lord Roberts. We honoured him. We would have died for him. So we only took 6 bottles. and they broke it open with a knife and broke 2 blades on the knife to get them.
I was going to say that Darren, in the latest Jack Rawlins, you have this
John
Rawlins.
Yeah.
So you've got this gorgeous big black boxer.
Oh yes, I do use black people in my books.
I have to say, what you should do a series with a free black slave, maybe a girl, and she could move around, and it would be really, really
well
successful.
Funnily enough, John Rawlins,
it?
In fact, went to Bristol. I mean, he was a real character. But this will get me going on another subject, which is I hate real people like Jane Austen and Oscar Wilde and Diana, Princess of Wales, the late, being made detectives. I think it's ridiculous.
So we should do a Diana series. That's another very good money spinner.
Yeah.
Ghost Diana. Ghost Diana talks to somebody.
Zombie Diana.
I seriously think those are rotten, and I never would do it. But John Rawlins did happen to be an apothecary, but nobody knew about him. But he has a lot of contact with black people because they come into his life as 18th century man, would see them around.
I think it's definitely, the point you make is very valid, in the sense that if something is set in a very cozy environment, to bring somebody in from the outside who might have prejudice against them, when the prejudice gets introduced, it would immediately become a great deal less cozy. But I have to say, I do think a mystery series in 18th century Bristol or something with a, you know, free black slave would be fantastic. Really good. Darren, off you go with that. We have a question for the lady in the front, and then I'll...
Well, there's two things that I'm thinking about. One is, of course, Peter Lovesley, who will stand proud as a cozy writer. But the thing that I was thinking about was historical mysteries, like Marsden's mysteries, which I think they're cozy, but I don't know. There are some genres within.
Oh, it's mental.
We're not allowed to say that word, Toby. Subgenres.
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 I think quite a lot of historicals are, but there are quite a lot of historicals that aren't. They vary like contemporaries, but somehow the 20s seem to attract a lot of people.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's partly the motive as well, isn't it? Because as you said, people are killing for a real reason in a cozy novel. You don't have serial killers. So even though Hercule Poirot says murder is easy, that's only covering up, that's people going on to kill to cover up because of the initial crime.
Yes.
So maybe that's, I think I've got you and you.
There might be other elements apart from the crime itself that can make something cozy or not. A lady once came up to me and she said, I
I will. For the people at the back, I was saying, Linda said that a lady came up to her and said that she loved a good murder, but she didn't like when people swore and jumped into bed with each other. There's plenty of books with those tastes, but yes, maybe, you know, it's true. There isn't too much swearing.
This is another thing with the American cozies, the ones I was describing with the recipes and the crafts and so on. A lot of them get fairly steamy, not usually completely graphic, but
there's always a cute vet or something. There's a cute vet in those.
Cute
then, you know, they meet each other. Yes, a tall cop with green eyes, and they meet, and they're kind of hostile, but at the same time, they know they're going to fall into straw in his vet barn later. And yours also, Tim, said that Dolores, your books are very action-driven and very. It's so sexist to me because I was reading this and I was like, "What's so manly?" And I was like, "Oh, Lauren, that's so sexist."
Oh yeah,
but they are very.
I must admit, when I was inventing my hero, it never occurred to me to put a woman in there because I wanted somebody I could fancy rotten, you know.
Ah, that too, right? Yes.
It never occurred to me not to have a female main character.
I mean, there's plenty of females in them.
I thought it was the flying planes and the army service and how gramophones work. God, I'm so sexy.
There's a lady at the back there, the blue jacket.
Right. And then the one in front.
There's one other element that I've noticed in a Canadian series, a wonderful Canadian series, the Inspector Murdoch series, written by Maureen Jennings, set in Victorian era.
Right, yeah.
The underlying bias is Catholic and Protestant.
Ooh.
Inspector Murdoch is Catholic. And at that time, it was really difficult to be a Catholic in Toronto. And so they also have lots of characters that are any religion and any race. I mean, she seems to integrate all of that. But I find tension between sort of religious groups very interesting in her series.
I will. There's a Canadian series. The Canadian series, the Inspector Murdoch mysteries, set in Victorian Toronto. And one of the hooks is that the inspector himself is Catholic, and there was a lot of anti-Catholic prejudice, I assume, because of all the French. In Toronto?
No,
not
English,
a French thing?
Scottish.
Oh, God, yes, we're bad about that kind of thing. So there's a Protestant-Catholic tension that runs through it. And I would say cozies and historicals can be a very good way also of exploring a particular society in a way that there was a lady before you. Who's the lady in the blue there?
Francis, you spoke about the income level of your character. All of you seem to be writing in fast. I have thoroughly enjoyed reading Anne Purser's books, which are more contemporary, written from a working class point of view. And I wonder, income doesn't seem to be a problem. Of course, they've won a lottery or something.
I'll just say it for the people in the back. This lady mentions there's a series written by Anne Purser, which has a British author. Who has a working class woman as a heroine and doesn't seem to have the same financial constraints, though she thinks they may have won the lottery. But that might, yes. I mean, it is more an even playing field now, I expect.
And also, I think what we regard as poverty now or not being very well off is so different to what it was in the 20s, when people were just so very, very hard up. And, well, really, being in the north of England was, and lots of other parts of England as well, was a bit like being in the third world now.
Yeah. I mean, in common with a lot of people, I mean, that's actually my own family background. You know, I grew up in the two up, two down, literally with a tin bath. I mean, my kids always say, oh, God, mother, you sound about 100 years old when you say this.
Uphill 6 miles in the snow, barefoot every day.
Well, no, I mean, you know, in the cardboard box sketch. It wasn't unrelieved misery, but on the other hand, you just couldn't go running off and investigating murders. You know, you had to work.
Imagine the father of your no less that I can't do accents, but you know, they ain't going to investigate a murder today. You go down the mill instead. That kind of
there's
thing.
There's another factor there, which is one reason I chose Daisy to make Daisy a scion of the aristocracy, and that is that she can talk to people on every level. If you start with a working class person,
right.
And you want to write stately home mysteries, which is what my first one is, your parlourmaid cannot go in and ask the Duke where he was at 5 p.m. on Sunday afternoon.
Do you know, that's exactly right, isn't it? If you start at the top, then, you know.
There are a lot of posh people who would be very, very bad at talking to working class people.
Well, yeah, but not Daisy.
You really couldn't do it.
John Rawlings is actually working for Sir John Fielding, the blind beak, and he was a real character, and it said, blind though he was, and he used to come into court with a switch twitching in front of him, and he'd sit down, and he could tell which were the criminals by 1,000 voice. He knew 1,000 voices of criminals. I think this is gross exaggeration, but all the same, what a wonderful reputation to have.
And being an apothecary also means we're all quite aware of, you know, trying to, you know, make excuses, because when you start, hopefully you're going to write a series because it's easier, and then it gets translated, and then people keep wanting them, so it's better basically. You're quite aware that you're going to want to be able to take your sleuth into different places, and obviously having an apothecary, everybody's going to need a doctor at some stage. So was that in your mind when you started out?
Not really, no. Because, oh, there's another story now. I need a panel to myself to tell you why. But
I discovered
him one day, and then I knew he'd be, sorry, 10 minutes, I knew he'd be a marvellous character. I just
That's not 10 minutes for you, Darren Hall.
No.
When do I get to start reading my list of titles for the
Well, I think he's got most of them next door.
Yes, question. I was wondering, when you're writing a series, and particularly a series that has a label like Cozy, do you feel pressure when you're writing the next book that you sort of put yourself into this stream of writing that your readers are expecting, your publishers are expecting that? Do you feel that you're writing with one eye on the market, or do you just write what you want to write?
It's a combination.
Let me just say that repeat the question. When you're writing a series, particularly one that's been labelled Cozy, how much are you aware in subsequent books that you're writing to a particular shape? Like, are you continuing to write for the market? Are you writing what you want? How much is what you're writing tempered by the demands of your publisher saying, I want another Cozy, you can't talk to prostitutes, I don't care how much you want to? I'm paraphrasing.
Frankly, I write Cozies because that's what I like to read, and I'm not going to suddenly start writing a lot of gore because I don't want to write a lot of gore any more than I want to read it. With writing a series as long as mine is, and I shall shortly be starting on the 20th, one of the major considerations is, have I done this before? Just making it enough different. And I said that Anthem for Doomed Youth is probably my darkest yet. That wasn't intentional, it's just the way it worked out. But I've had comments from readers on both sides of that. I had one Amazon reviewer who gave it 1 star. She said she normally gave my books 5 stars,
you
but
can't
she gave
read
it
your Amazon reviews.
One. I don't normally, but for some reason I did read this. Because it wasn't cozy enough. It was too upsetting, too serious. It doesn't go into a lot of blood and gore, but it is sad.
It's sad. It's supposed to be.
I've had other people who think it's my best yet. So, and they are readers who have enjoyed earlier books. So, you know, it's no good trying to write what someone else expects. You write what you want to write.
Certainly, I find that it's not that you set out to write a cozy as such. I mean, I certainly set out to write a detective story. I mean, as has been commented on, I've got a fairly mechanical mind. I do like blowing things up, and I do like action.
Biggles, actually, in some ways. I thought it was Biggles as much as anything.
Yeah. And there's quite a lot of boys' toys about the whole thing. But I really do like the mechanical working out. I totally admire Agatha Christie. So, because everything is so marvellously dovetailed, and
Dorothy says, not the train timetables.
Absolutely, and that gives me intense satisfaction. And when I can get it right, and it does take a long time, and I think I'm going out of my head most of the time when I'm trying to sort this plot out. fine. You know, once I've got that nailed, the mechanics of it, that's when, you know, the colouring comes into it. And really, you've just got to go where this story takes you. And so, therefore, you know, you mentioned talking to prostitutes. Well, actually, I had a whole story where it all revolved around a brothel, which I wouldn't immediately think of as the sort of story I'd write, but I ended up writing it and actually really enjoyed it.
John Rawlings is always being accosted by prostitutes. From 12 years old to 75. Plus ça change, they're still at it. But they're after him as well.
Yeah.
So.
Yes, and just the dead ones. Frances, yeah. Do you feel you're 2 books into a series? If you've got a sense of its framework? I mean, I think everyone has a sense of a framework. You know, if I write young adult books, that's what, you know, I know the shape of those, and I write my dirty bits and I know the shape of those. So, you know, you have to start with, I think all of us would agree, you're starting with a shape out of which you're not going to go too much, because then it wouldn't be that book anymore.
It wouldn't be your
there
voice.
There wouldn't
yeah,
be a book,
yeah,
and it wouldn't
yeah.
be that kind of book. So, you know, if I'm paid to write a young adult book, I can scarcely complain if my editor sends it back, because, you know, everybody started, you know, because they're doing drugs halfway through, they're nowadays and they really like it. But do you have the shape in your head now of where everything is?
Well, I was given a tip last year at St Hilda's by someone who's written 2 quite long crime series, and she said, don't give your character any irritating habits, and be careful what their hobbies are, because she said she'd given her character a greenhouse. And she said, every time I write a new book, I have to think about something for the bloody greenhouse.
It's Ariadne Oliver. Do you know, it's Ariadne Oliver eating all the apples and then
yeah.
complaining about how bloody Finn and not knowing anything about Finland. It's
this
perfect,
is one reason Daisy moves around the country a lot.
Yeah.
I didn't want her stuck in that village.
Right.
And, if you have a different
setting. Oh, gosh,
setting
in 20 books
time.
Now
yeah.
you go mental.
Yeah.
There is a gentleman here who I've been
Bill.
Sorely neglecting.
Now, regardless of how you classify your books, because the same controversy takes place in the States, and the same feelings about cozy or not cozy. By early definition, a cozy is where any crime that is terrible takes place, but it's off scene and you don't discuss it. But what I'm curious about is, how does your present life situation, where you are, your health, the world around you, affect with your book within where you are in your book? Does it affect or change, or can you step aside of your today life and still go back to where you think you were going with your book before that?
Oh, really good question. I will repeat it briefly. First of all, he said that cozy, traditionally the definition of a cozy is that the crime happens, you know, as in Greek tragedies, offset, and then people come in and talk about it, but you don't actually see it. But then the question is, and I will go down the line for this one, how does what's happening in your daily life affect you as you're writing? If something good or bad happens to you as you're writing a book, is it very hard to stop it spilling in, or can you keep a clear dividing line? I think that's fantastically
well
interesting.
It spills in,
you.
I will tell you, because my partner died right as I was on the deadline of a book.
Oh.
Very unexpectedly, he just died. And I couldn't look at the book for a week. I was in absolute mourning, and then I thought, my God, I'm on the deadline of this beastly thing. But you know, the book from that moment on had a darker feel.
So
it did change. It became much darker, and the ending is darker. Everything is darker about the book.
And it wasn't your intention to do that initially.
No.
And it had not been her intention to do that. It had very much seeped in. I think it's the last question. It's a great one to end on.
I think it's almost inevitable, isn't it? I mean, most people here do write, but certainly if you don't write, you read an awful lot. And you just know that the sort of things that a writer's interested in and the sort of things that actually happen to you absolutely have to affect what you're writing. Otherwise, really, what are you writing about?
But he's not talking about pulling on past experience. He's talking about if something big happened. Have you had a book change really as a result of?
No, I don't think so.
I don't think I
yeah.
have either.
No.
The one thing that has changed is between my 2 series that Daisy is still in her 20s after 20 books.
Yeah.
Yeah. I decided I want to get a sleuth who is nearer my own age.
Oh,
so
45 or 48, right?
That's right. Now, the Cornish series, it's a widow in her 60s.
Yeah.
So that was life experience, if you like.
Frances?
Well, I think if things are going wrong in your life, it can be absolutely wonderful to go somewhere else into your novel. The book that I just finished that comes out on 1st September, it's set in May 1923. When I got to the end of it and I read it, I thought, why is it so cold all the time in this May? And then I realised that the opening scene, something that happens in the book, was redolent of something quite bad that happened in my own childhood. And I hadn't really thought of that. And then it sort of clicked and I thought, oh, that's why everyone is huddling around the fire all the time. and I thought, well, I can't go back now and make it warmer. I just have to leave it as it is.
Can we just say something about Frances? I read a wonderful article that you wrote for Mystery Women magazine, where you said when you were trying to avoid writing, you went and polished your skirting board.
I actually took up all the stair carpet and I painted all the skirting board all the way up the stairs. And it's very easy to take up a stair carpet. But have you ever tried putting one down on your own?
On wet paper?
I just watch America's Next Top Model when I'm avoiding writing.
Yeah.
I wish I could clean the
house. So if you get in one of Frances' books someone taking up the stair carpet.
Someone struggling with the rod. Well, we sadly have to end. You have been a brilliant audience. Thank you so much. Everyone who was on the panel will be signing in, what's it called, moderating for, anyway, room 4, which I think is next door. So please go and get the copy signed of your books that you've purchased. And I'm going to give the prize to the Race and Cozies question, because I thought that was really interesting. Had not heard it before, and it's really got me thinking, and gave Darren a really good new series idea. So.